Hello and welcome to the ATL Charlie Hoops podcast. I'm Robbie Cowan. Joining me as always is Bo Cherney. Bo, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm a huge fan of your intro music choice for today.
Yeah, well, look, we're actually going to talk about the Hawks for a while and be, it's going to be warranted for this time. they're actually a topic of conversation around the league, not just here in Atlanta. They are 9-1 in the last 10, I believe.
Yes, sir.
On just an absolute heater of late. We were recording this Sunday afternoon, so they won last night in Houston, a rare win in Texas for the Hawks.
Hey, that was my Hawks Hoop headline.
Yeah, Texas is where the Hawks go to die. They've got something like 4 wins since 2000 there, something stupid. The last 3 games, they beat the Bulls at home. Bulls were without Noah, but Hawks looked great there. A fully healthy Cleveland team on the road in a dominant performance.
By 30. Well, technically just 29, but that's close enough to 30. Round up.
Wax that ass. And then Houston last night, and they've been doing it without Jeff Teague. So kind of that's where I want to start is the play of Dennis Schroeder and Shelvin Mack of late. Mack got off to a horrific start to the season. And a lot of us were about done with Shelvin. But to his credit, he has come back, and obviously, most notably in that Cleveland game. What did he have, 27 or something like that?
24. He was 6 for 6 on threes.
Yeah, I mean, he was just nuts, out of his mind. And I mean, the point guard position for a long time in Atlanta was not the best, especially behind Teague.
Yeah.
You had Kirk Heinrich for a while.
You had the Bibster before
we had the end of the Bibby era. Bibby was solid for like the first few years.
First year and a half.
It's a rare gluttony of options for Coach Bud at point guard. And let's start with Dennis, who has run the ship in Teague's absence and run it well.
I think it really helps with the way he's just developing, just how much more time he's gotten with the starters. I think now he can just get plugged into that lineup, and he knows everybody so well already that those guys have been around him for pretty much, this is the second season now. They're developing some chemistry. Horford's back. That always helps for a point guard to have Horford. We saw that with Teague last year when Horford went out. Teague had pretty much struggled for about a month trying to figure out how to play without Al.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's been a big catalyst for him. Just besides learning to play in the NBA game, learning how to, get layups. I mean, I think we've talked about that before, just how he's changed kind of his form, just going up earlier on with the way he keeps the ball up on layups.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's finishing better, and, he learned to shoot.
Yeah, I mean, he still can't shoot threes, but he can shoot, like, that off-the-dribble, like, 15-footer. That's a big deal. That's sort of a big deal so that he can actually have some range at least.
Well, I mean, the thing is that pull-up is really kind of the neutralizer for how defenses try to handle him. They they really sink under on screens on him because he's not going to pull up and really hit you. He occasionally will hit a three, but he's not going to be super accurate.
Yeah.
So you go under the screens on him, and people sink so far back in the lane on him that, he has that elbow jumper pretty much whenever he wants it. And so you start seeing him when he makes that, it opens so much up because it pulls guys up, which that opens up lanes for Al and Paul to roll. It opens, when they sink back, it's hard for him to squeeze a pass in. It's hard for him to get to the rim. So when he's making that jump shot, it really just opens up the rest of that pick and roll game. Because all of a sudden you got passing lanes to the roll man, you have a driving lane because he's got such great speed. And I think for me the biggest thing is he's learned how to harness his speed.
Right. He can change speeds so much more effectively now. I think we saw it once last night against Patrick Beverley of all people, who's extremely, aggressive defender on point guards, and he just kind of blew right past him just being able to change speeds effectively.
Yeah, and the other thing, I think this is where his development has kind of, we all expected him to be a good defender, but he wasn't. Mm-hmm. He played too fast on the defensive end. You'd see him, he's learned on screens, like he used to go under too quickly, so guys would reverse and deny the screen, and he would already be under, or he would get under too quickly, and you know, we hedge a lot on screens, so he wouldn't hold the roll man up at all. He would just squeeze through because he's pretty slippery through those screens, unlike Teague, who just kind of runs into the center of the defender. But like Dennis would get around it, and then there's nobody on the roll man, at least even holding him up. So like if our guy hedged high and then tried to get back, there was too much space in an easy passing lane.
Mm-hmm.
He's learned to control his speed on that end. So he'll hold up the roll man and then get around it and recover in time to get back and let there be a smoother transition. And then, you know, he's obviously got really good hands, and he's starting to really learn how to pass to the corners this year, mm-hmm. too. I don't think that's as big of a thing. You know, I think he had to learn when you drive and penetrate, it's not just guys under the rim. He's finding Mike in the corner a lot. He's finding Damari in the corner, Kyle in the corner. And I guess that's our best transition to Kyle Korver, who's just hitting everybody with so much sauce. He's on pace to be the only player in history with a 50-50-95 season. So he's played more than, I think, six games
in a year. Which is ridiculous.
Right, right. Like, it's and again, it's one of these things where each week I feel like we have this conversation where, like, okay, you know, he's shooting 54% from three.
It's going to go down. It'll probably go down a little bit.
Like,
yeah.
He's, you know, maybe he'll regress to the mean a little bit. But at this point, the mean for him is probably 50%.
I mean, the offense is based around getting him open looks, and he's such a good shooter. It's just hard to think, like, okay, he's just going to start missing at a bigger rate.
And he doesn't take bad shots. Like, he just doesn't.
Right.
It's not, you know, I mean, a lot of guys, you expect them to shoot, you know, they're going to take a contested three here or there, but he's never, I mean, the thing is...
He doesn't really heat check, I guess, is...
Well,
he doesn't take that.
Mean,
he will, but he doesn't take that, like, stupid, like,
but
Jordan Crawford
a,
heat check that just, like, drives
right,
percentage
the,
down needlessly.
The difference between a Kyle heat check and most everybody else is, a Kyle heat check is still a catch-and-shoot three. It just might be from 28 feet with a guy kind of near him.
Mm-hmm.
Most guys, the reason I think they get into trouble is they get hot and they try to do a pull-up three. Kyle never has the ball in his hands to even worry about that. So you're not worried about him. You know, he'll occasionally take a handoff and take a one dribble and come around that screen and pull up. But, I mean, that's money.
That little curl he does around the top of the key,
mm-hmm.
that little one
little,
dribble.
Little handoff
yeah.
play.
Yeah.
I love that play so much. If the big doesn't hedge real high, it's firing. It's gone. And like I think my favorite play they run off of that is when they give him that handoff, and Al slips the screen and dives to the rim, and he does the little jump pass.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Like you're not supposed to do the jump pass, but I love that little where it looks like he's going up for a shot and just rifles it down to Al. But yeah, it's wild watching him play because he's just so crazy efficient, and he's taken a ton of threes. He's taken like six a game.
I still think he leads the league. He might still lead the league in three-point field goals made, which is ridiculous.
It's so dumb.
And he's doing other things too. That's always been one of my favorite things about Korver. He's been, like you said, you know, making timely passes. He rebounds okay. You know, plays average to good defense.
Yeah. Here are the 3-point stats. He's second in the league in three pointers made, one above Wes Matthews, one behind Steph Curry at 76.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 14th in attempts. He's 15th in attempts. He has 141 attempts. Steph has 197, Wes has 199. Dame has 187. Trevor Ariza is launching. He's got 202. So, like, I mean, that's the efficiency. It's just insane.
I think this is his first season he's produced. I mean, so far he's produced an above average PER. I think is an insane stat for him. He's just shooting at that high of a level.
I think, well, yeah, I mean, that just kind of shows the holes in PER.
Well, yeah, that's... But
as much as anything, it's like, okay.
He's had to overcome himself in that statistic.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and we saw it last night. Like, he finished, like, four times at the rim, three times at the rim.
Mm-hmm.
That was nice. He was, like, leaking out for outlet passes.
Yeah.
He had a finger roll at one point. It was awesome.
I didn't watch the whole game last night, but did he have any of your little one-handed floaters things that he does that you love?
No, literally it was two leak out outlet passes that he had layups, and then he was coming off of a screen, you know, that little handoff play on the elbow. It wasn't at the three-point line, but the one at the elbow. And he got to the free throw line, and there was nobody in the lane. So he looked really confused and kind of, like, sheepishly went to the rim and did a finger roll. It was great.
I might need to research this now.
It was really funny, because he didn't look comfortable at all. Like, that's my favorite thing. I've never seen a player who shoots that well and is that uncomfortable around the rim. Like, he's getting a little better at finishing around the rim, but, like, it's almost like he doesn't believe he's there by himself.
Mm-hmm. He takes, like, a weird, almost, like, hook-looking thingy on a layup.
Yeah.
He doesn't, like, do a pure layup. He, like, comes around, like, wide to, like, thinking there's always, like, someone coming weak side from her to block it.
Right.
So.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was looking around at this one because Dwight was just standing on the baseline doing nothing. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's – so when you look at these Eastern Conference rankings – I think this was a roundtable question on HP the other day, was, you know, Chicago and Cleveland are 4 and 5 right now. You expect them to kind of funnel their way to the top at some point. Mm-hmm. You got Toronto, Washington, and Atlanta all at the top. Toronto at 21-6. Washington and Atlanta each have 19 wins. Hawks have one more loss. Who falls down at this point? Is kind of the question. Is, like, normally I would say the Hawks. Like, any other year, my immediate answer is Atlanta finishes as the 5 seed. However, we talked about the schedule so much early on, where we were kind of like, okay, let's pump the brakes. They're beating up on a weak schedule,
mm-hmm.
which they absolutely were. However, these last three games, you start pondering to yourself. And really, it's on the defensive end where they've changed. Their defensive rating the last 10 is, I think, like 94 or 95.
I think a lot of that has to do with Horford's getting his legs back. He talked about early in the season his conditioning wasn't quite there. And while it looked there in preseason, once you actually get in the full-speed games, it looks completely different for him. And he knew that his conditioning wasn't there. And now, like, in the past couple of weeks, he's been like, yeah, I'm feeling really good. I feel like, you know, I'm getting really back into the game, and I think that's helped a lot with the Hawks defense, just him being able, like, in, you know, third, fourth quarter, him still having his legs under him just to rotate and defend and everything.
Yeah. That was a big thing early in the year, was you could just tell that he didn't have his timing down at all on the defensive side. I mean, it was a problem offensively, but he's such a skilled guy, he was getting his points. But the defense with him on the floor was really bad early.
Mm-hmm.
And that's changed. Millsap's starting to just really come on. He still can't make a free throw, but that's okay. Like, it is what it is.
So,
and
Thabo's going to make a shot eventually. I know he hasn't made one all year.
Thabo's made like 3 3-pointers in the last 3 games. It's wild. Like, that's like the hottest he's ever been in like 3 years. Remember when he shot 41% from three that 1 year in OKC?
He did it twice, I think. I thought he shot 40% twice in OKC.
And then he got hurt
yeah.
and never could shoot again.
Here's the thing about Thabo, though. He's an extremely efficient rebounder for a guard forward, whatever you call him. He's like, I think, leads the Hawks in total rebounds for 36. And he's getting them on both ends, too. He's playing extreme.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes helps if you're missing a bunch of shots. You can sometimes get your own rebound, but he's definitely
attacking the boards, and that's what, you know, Budenholzer really likes out of his smaller guys, is for them to go in and, you know, secure the defensive glass and everything.
Yeah. Mike Scott still shoots a lot.
You mean all the time? Every time he touches the ball?
Every time.
I'm shocked when he doesn't shoot.
One day I need to go look at his shots per second on SportView. Like, seconds holding the ball. Because it's got to be near the top of the league. Like, I bet it's higher than Korver's.
I wouldn't be shocked, because Korver does some, you know, he doesn't dribble a lot, but he will, you know, like, get the ball in the quarter and then dribble it out towards, like, the wing and everything to, you know, start a set and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm actually going to look this up.
I was talking with Brad Rowland about how we need to just, like, get, like, a, almost like a mixtape of him, just, like, put, like, a little, you know, clock in the corner to see how long he holds it each time.
Yeah. Is this searchable? God, no. Don't do this to me. Alright. Okay, I'll do that another time.
Next podcast, look forward to
there's
it.
There's literally no... Alright. What are we talking about here? Let's, Of course we were talking about Mike Scott. Shoot or shoot?
Yeah.
Mike Scott. Shoot or shoot. So in the East, you have 5 good teams. I think it's pretty clear there. And then you have the Bucks, who you expect to kind of drop a little bit after the disappointing Jabari news that he's out for the year. Mm-hmm. And then it's not a whole lot else.
No.
Some basketball teams are going to make the playoffs.
They're not going to be good, essentially.
They're not going to be good?
Nope.
And
everybody's going to bitch about it.
Yeah, pretty much. I think the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs will be just fine.
Absolutely.
The first round will be atrocious, but probably should end quickly.
It will be atrocious, except for whoever ends up as 4 or 5.
4 or 5.
Yeah.
Unless it ends up being like...
Unless like Cleveland or Chicago ends up as like the 4 or 5. I doubt both will stay there.
Yeah, I mean like...
The only thing I can see is like Cleveland ending up at the 4 and ending up with like... Maybe, like, Atlanta.
Yeah, that would be really depressing. That would be really bad for the Hawks. Yeah, they beat them, but no.
Miami's there, but everybody's been injured.
I don't know what's going on with them. I know Dwayne's been in and out.
Injured.
They started quick, and I don't know if it was a schedule thing or what, but they look, you know, they look perfectly okay to start the year, and now, you know, I think they've been nicked up a little bit. Obviously, McRoberts is out,
mm-hmm.
which is not good.
Nope.
Love McBob. Speedy recoveries, all that. Boston's your 8 seed right now. The team that just traded away its best player.
Somehow has a positive point differential. Which shocked me when
Didn't you say something about they played only like 9 home, 9 road games?
Yeah, they've only played 9. They've played 15 home games to 9 road games. Where Orlando, who is 2.5 games behind them, has played 10 home games and 19 road games.
Oy. Well, they're 10 and 19.
I believe Orlando could end up in there pretty easily.
they're a scrappy team. Yeah.
Channing Frye's pretty, you know, decent veteran for that young team.
I like Channing Frye. Oladipo's shooting better this year.
Mm-hmm. Tobias Harris is really good.
Tobias Harris has become a very good player.
Mm-hmm.
But while we're kind of around the subject of Boston, let's talk about this Rajon Rondo trade.
Yeah.
That just kind of all of a sudden manifested itself out of nowhere. I mean, for 2.5 years, this dude was in every trade rumor. It just got to the point where you never thought it was actually going to happen. It was like Josh Smith with the Hawks. There was like 2.5 years where everybody was like, Josh is going to get traded. And it was like, no, he's not. So you get Rondo. So Dallas gets Rondo. They ship out Brendan Wright, Jay Crowder, and Jameer Nelson. Jameer had to have thought, like, yes, I'm out of Orlando, I'm on a contender, yes. And then
this happened.
30 games into the year, he's shipped to Boston. And then a first round pick and a second round pick. And I think a few things. First, why the hell didn't the Celtics pull the trigger on trade a couple years ago? They weren't good. They clearly weren't trying to really get... They weren't getting big free agents. They weren't going to be able to finagle another KG Ray Allen type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Rajon Rondo was not going to make that team much more than a mediocre team, which is exactly what happened this year. I'm sure they were getting offers that were better than what they got from Dallas. They got three first round picks for the carcasses of Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. I mean, that's Billy King, but
ask Billy King, you want to reunite the
seriously?
I
feel like every time somebody has a big name that they're trying to unload, their first call is to the Nets. I know mine would be.
Yeah.
Like, they've taken Joe Johnson off of the Hawks' hands. They took KG and Paul Pierce, Darren Williams. Like, they just are shameless about eating a contract and giving up picks for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's a bummer now that they have no assets, because like that used to be the go-to. If you need two first-round picks for somebody, you just holler at Brooklyn or maybe New York or maybe the Knicks.
The Knicks do have their pick this year, so watch out. They might
they might wheel in deep.
Yeah.
I don't think they can because of whatever rule is in place. But
I don't think they can because they're actually, you know, going to get like a top 5 pick probably.
That too. So you have Rondo going to the Mavs. Last night was a weird, it was his first game.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like Rondo, but they were playing the Spurs JV squad.
Yep.
And barely won. Monte went off. And so I think the biggest thing was, could Rondo and Monte coexist? You know, could a couple of assholes coexist, essentially? And I think the answer to that question is, it goes only one of two ways. It either is a disaster or it works perfectly.
Yeah, I can't.
There's no in between. Like, if there's two people that are just grumpy, kind of nobody likes in the locker room guys, they either attract to each other or try to fight each other in practice.
And here's the thing, just on the court with those two, neither of them can really shoot. Monte's
right.
Better, but Monte can't really shoot either.
Not efficient. Yeah. But here's my thing.
He will shoot, and people will guard him out there, so that does
Monte
make a difference.
Monte will shoot. Here's why I think it works with Monte. Rondo's not going to try and take Monte's shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times you wonder, oh, can they handle the roles? Monte's not gonna have the ball in his hands to create as much, but Monte's not gonna see a drop in his shots. If anything, he's just gonna get better looks because he's gonna be spotting up.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's willing to do that and just accept the fact that he's not gonna get as many chances to break guys down off the dribble and pull up, but will accept the fact that Rondo's gonna collapse defenses and kick it out to him, I think it could work great.
Yeah,
I really do, because, you know, you're still going to have him as a secondary ball handler on the floor. They're still going to run plenty of stuff for him.
And Dirk's always going to be there as your safety net.
Yeah, and Dirk is, you know, I think you'll see Dirk's role kind of expand towards the end of the year. I think Carlisle is doing a really good job of not putting too much of the load on him early.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of how Pop does with Duncan. I mean, obviously we saw Duncan go off the other night. He's been playing really well, but you see, you know, good coaches kind of take the load off of their older stars and kind of allow other guys to work. And then I think later in the season, Dirk will be getting those late game shots that Monte's taking right now, at least some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to be an issue. You still have – and so now at this point, Rondo's not an elite defender. I think steals
– I don't think he's a good – you can call him a good defender.
No.
I think you can call him – an average defender.
Yeah.
It depends,
I mean,
it depends
not,
if he, you know, cares about defending. But.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, but he's still...
He takes up a lot of space, really.
Yeah.
Like his audience, you know,
long.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he can sink back in passing lanes and kind of dig at guys, and he does that little reach around maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually think this trade's a negative on the defensive end just because Tyson can't play all that much. Like, you can't run Tyson 35 a night. You trade away your best rim protector off the bench in Brandon Wright. When you take him off, I just don't know who's there. Because with Tyson, you're probably going to miss Tyson for 15 games a year. He's going to get hurt. You hope that's not in the playoffs. You're going to need to rest Tyson. You can't play him all that often. As you can't play him, like, huge minutes, so you got to keep him to 28 to 30.
Right. So
now you take Brandon Wright off that team. I think that's the biggest issue for me with this trade. And you just, for the Mavs, I think they're just saying our offense and our starters are as good as anybody's in the league at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to make, and they're hoping that that's enough, especially once they get to the playoffs. But I definitely have concerns about that second line defense. And not even second line, but when you, even if you have the starters in there, Parsons isn't a good defender, really. He gets lost. Like, he's not the most attentive guy. And
you're the best, like, defender. Your best defender is Devin Harris, who's great, but I mean, that's not gonna.
Yeah, so you even have that first team out there, and you take Tyson away from the rim. They're gonna give up points in a hurry. So that's my biggest question about this move. How much better did you really get for a playoff run? You get Rondo, you get a guy who's been there, he can run the offense. That's great. The offense wasn't the issue, though.
Mm-hmm. The offense was at a, you know, practically historic pace in terms of efficiency.
Like, you're running, you know, a top 10 all-time offense right now. You get Rondo, maybe you climb to, like, fifth all-time, fourth all-time, but you're not, your defense didn't get any better. I think people have this perception of Rondo as some defensive stopper, and he's not. He might have been that for 2008
mm-hmm.
when he cared a lot more about defense on a night-in, night-out basis.
I think a lot of people are basing, you know, a lot of positivity out of, oh, playoff Rondo still in there. Which is a good point, I think. We've seen him, you know, sort of have that, you know, big game that can change a playoff series. But if you're in the West, I don't know how much that's going to get you saying, okay, Rajon might give us one or two games in the playoffs, but during the regular season, he might not give us, you know, practically anything better.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have to go through, you know, a couple of tough playoff series in the West. I don't know if he really moves the needle that much. I mean, I think they're 25th in defense or something right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you're expecting, you know, become, okay, we're going to be a historic offense and that's just going to carry us, because that hasn't really worked for anybody else.
Yeah, I mean...
We had the Suns here for, you know...
you've got to...
Five-year
yeah,
run.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a defensive base there, and they don't really have a whole lot of pieces. I don't buy into the Mavs as real contenders. They might, if they get the right draw in the playoffs, they might, you know, weasel their way to a Western Conference Finals, maybe, but I don't even see that, because I think teams they could beat would be Houston maybe, depending on Dwight's health, but if Dwight's healthy, that's a problem down low for them. Yeah, I think they could beat, I think pretty much anybody can beat the Clippers in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Portland maybe, but Aldridge is a problem. But like, if they draw Memphis, no. Like, that's like nightmare for them.
I do have to say, apparently they've been linked to Jermaine O'Neal, who I don't know how much he has left at this point, but he was actually pretty good last year in Golden State.
Like,
in terms of bench. You know, defensive guy.
You need a bench rim protector, but I'm not sure Jermaine O'Neal's your guy.
He did pretty good last year, man. I'm saying, I mean, at 30, just, going 35, 30, you know, once you get in those late 30s, and one, you know, eventually 1 year can be gone. But if that's going to be their solution, I can see it sort of, but I don't know if he's not going to give you anything better than Brandon Wright was giving you. Brandon Wright was giving you a pretty good, you know, on both offense and defense in terms of bench bigs.
Yeah. But let's look at the rest of the West. Let's talk Warriors, just because they keep being awesome. They did finally lose Memphis. So we'll talk about the Warriors in Memphis and kind of, I desperately want that to be a series in the playoffs. I feel like I say that about every matchup of Western Conference teams. Except for, like, I would not really, like, yeah, no, there's really not a matchup I'd be like, damn, that sucks.
So like, at this point, you're ending up practically anything. I mean, unless you're really down on one team.
Well, and here's my favorite part about the Western Conference playoffs is you're going to have, like, OKC as a 7 or 8 seed. I don't see how they make the climb past maybe 6 at this point. Like, that would take a hell of a run, and KD's still nicked up. And so you're going to get, like, OKC. You might get OKC Memphis first round, which
is stupid.
Is insane. So, yeah, I love it. Like, the West first round is going to be so much fun. I mean, the entire Western Conference playoff is going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I was joking around the other night, talking with somebody, and said the East should just be a lottery, or, like, for the Eastern Conference playoffs. Like, earlier we said, like, you know, the semifinals would be fine, but still, it's not going to be as much fun. Like, even if you got, like, Toronto-Cleveland's not a series that I look at and go, oh, that's fun basketball.
I can't wait. Just hopefully somehow it ends up like Cleveland and Chicago in the second round in the East. Just because that means, like, you know, Toronto or Washington or Atlanta is going to slip in as the other team in the conference finals. And I think people are just going to flip out. It's like, what's going on here?
But yeah, okay. So here's the thing. The East playoffs, you know, after the first round might not be bad, but tell me this doesn't sound like a way more fun idea. Carnival games. Eastern Conference carnival games. Like a three-legged race. You put the tallest guy and the shortest guy together from each team and make them, like, run around the court. Egg toss. Dude, the egg toss would be intense. Like, going all the way across the court with an egg toss. Like, we could do all kinds of stuff.
This seems like carnival games. This seems like anti-All-Star material. Right here.
Exactly, but it's anti-playoffs because it's the Eastern Conference.
This is our first round?
Yeah, first round. Like, so that, and then, like, that'd be great. I'd be all over that. Like, because then you could have some real dark horses. Like, pie-eating contest? I think so. I can't remember who suggested it, but can you imagine the demand for Raymond Felton for a pie-eating contest if it was deciding your fate in the first round? Yo, I'm telling you.
This is why Atlanta's been stockpiling forwards and centers on their bench.
Exactly. For the pie-eating contest that decides the fate of the Eastern Conference. Like, think about how intense it would be if there was an egg toss that meant you're going to the NBA Finals between, like, two teams throwing it, like, 94 feet.
This is dumb, but it's so spectacular that it just might work.
I think it works. I don't know. Like, you remember, like, field day in, like, fourth grade? Like, all that shit.
Yeah.
Everything you did there, we do that exact same thing. Except for the Eastern Conference playoffs. Like, pack an arena out. You know how, like, fans screaming while people are like, oh, it'd be great. People would show up to that. Absolutely. And then you just make the West, every series is a 14-game series to fill the time slots.
14 games?
14 games, best of 14.
We're going to end up with, you know, like a 7-7 tie at some point.
Best of 15. Shut up. Whatever. I just did double. Shut up. Best of 15. Whatever. I don't care. It works. I'm petitioning the NBA for this. I hope people get
go straight to the top. Go to, you know, whitehouse.gov. Start a petition.
Yes. Thanks, Obama. The other news we haven't talked about lately because we haven't done this in forever. The Kings are doing some wild shit.
Are imploding.
Doing some wild shit out there in Sacramento, firing their coach,
mm-hmm.
threatening to play 4-on-5, which I want to see happen so badly.
I just want to see it because I know it's gonna fail spectacularly.
Oh, it's gonna be so bad, but like, what I really want to see is I want to see them do it for, like, one quarter and, like, just get incredibly hot from three-point range or something. Or, like, just get a couple stupid steals and, like, just leak out and their cherry picker has, like, 15 in the first quarter. People are like, oh, shit, maybe this works.
And then the second quarter happens and they're like...
Hey. And then the second quarter happens and, like, so, like, you have, like, a good 30 minutes where Twitter is like, oh, my God, this might work. Because that's how reactionary everybody is. Like, people would be like, holy shit, they're right. And, like, and then, like, by the third quarter, they're down, like, 40.
I want to see Kyle Korver go against some of that defense.
That's the thing, is, like, the reason zones work and kind of weird defenses, funky stuff works in college and stuff is you're not facing the elite shooters every night. You're not facing... Like, the reason a zone works in college is college three-point shooters do not shoot a good percentage on a high volume of shots.
Nope.
NBA three-point shooters do. That's why people don't... You know, you see people go to zone for 5 minutes to kind of break the flow if people are penetrating just to kind of throw for a loop.
Yeah, kind of force some, you know, force you to take some jumpers, essentially.
Force you to take some jumpers, kind of get you out of the rhythm of what you were doing offensively, mm-hmm. make you change what you're doing. If, you know, especially if you're getting killed in pick and rolls and stuff, you change it up. But no, there's a reason no one runs a 2-3 or a 3-2 in the pros. There's also defensive 3 seconds, which helps. But
yeah. Run a, like, box and one.
It would not work. You're going to run a box defense? Like a four-man box defense? The thing about that is the corners are all of a sudden wide open because you literally just plant one dude on the baseline, like a big man on the baseline, and tell somebody to drive, and it's just driving kicks. NBA offenses would destroy a four-man defense.
Insanely. Like, it's not... It wouldn't... Like, I don't even see how it's going to be close. There's just going to be so much space. Like, there's no way you're not going to have at least, you know, one open guy or one open cutter right. or one open lane or anything.
Right. And the other thing is this. The only way it works is if you're forcing hella turnovers. Because... Like, it's not like on a missed shot, the point guard's just going to turn and wheel back and cover that guy. They're too fast in the mm-hmm. NBA. They're going to get back and cover that guy. Like, I can't believe we're even talking about this like they would actually do it. Like, there's no way they actually try this. Like, they might try some principles of it where they have a guy at the top.
They just have a guy that leaks out, like, really quickly.
Yeah, like, as soon as anything happens. Like, even if the ball gets in the post, they try to leak out. Like, I could see something like that. But, like, if they literally tried to do, like, a cherry picker, like, some intramural shit. That's the thing, is, like, I mean, we had cherry pickers all the time in, like, fraternity intramurals because people hung over and didn't want to run. It wasn't out of, like, some strategic, like, oh, this will work.
Some, like, next level strategic thinking.
Yeah, it was like, no, I'm not feeling like running. I cannot imagine... It working at all. So, I hope they try it, just because I want to watch it.
It'll be entertaining, at least.
Oh my god, it'd be so much fun. Like, it would be a final score like that D-League game last night. That was like 175 to 150.
Yeah.
Except it would be like 175 to 100. And it would be
maybe
wonderful.
100.
Maybe. I mean, they'd probably get some of those leakouts to work. But, yeah. I love it. I say they go for it.
Here's the thing. It would be fun almost if they had, like, if they still had, like, Jimmer or something to play their leak out guy. Just so they're not even taking twos in this, they're taking threes.
Like, just, they try to cram, like, every analytical thing together. Okay, we're going to play 4-on-5. We're only going to shoot threes and layups. Like, we're that'd be great.
Yeah. I'm all over this. Be entertaining.
Shots up. No. Dude posted in, like, the corner. Like, only corner threes, too. He just stands in the corner the whole game.
Like guys do on free throw after a free throw on the other end.
Yeah, you just rocket a, like, outlet pass to the corner and hope he can make a three.
I'd love to see the practice for that. All right, we're going to just practice throw in that corner for an hour until you get it.
Yeah, it would be great. Just get Kevin Love on your team so you can just fire outlet passes.
So, okay, if they did this, who would be the optimal team for this?
I feel it'd have to be almost like Milwaukee's length with like, okay, like put Kevin Love on there and then like Korver or something.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with having Kevin Love is he can't play defense.
Right.
So we need somebody who can play defense and throw outlet passes. All right. So let's build the all 4-on-5 team. Like, you gotta put Korver as the cherry picker, right?
Yeah.
Just stand at the 3-point line. That way the outlet pass is shorter.
Yeah.
And, like, he's not scared of a guy running back by him. Okay. I like that.
And that leaves long rebounds, too. You can potentially still get rebounds off of a miss in that situation.
Mm-hmm. So, we're gonna place Korver down there. Who's your point guard? It's got to be somebody who can play hella defense at the top.
Conley?
I like that. You know, actually, the Grizz might actually be able to do this. If they had a shooter?
Yeah.
Like, if Courtney Lee just stood on the other side? Because think about it. They've got length on the wing. They have Marc Gasol at the rim.
I feel like you almost need someone else besides Zeebo. If you had someone else in Zeebo's spot.
If you could trade Zeebo out for like, kind of if you could get the way you do this is if you can get Marc Gasol and Anthony Davis on the floor together, on the same team, they could run 4-on-5.
Yeah,
because they could cover everything.
Yeah, if Conley, Davis, Gasol, Tony Allen,
the wing, and then no, it's perfect.
And then Korver or some
and
other
then
shooter.
Korver
yeah,
stands on the other side of the floor. So pretty much we just got to get Anthony Davis and Kyle Korver on the Grizz and we can run this. I'll get Hollinger on the phone. let me just call him up. John, it's easy. I figured it out.
We've figured out basketball, you know what I mean?
we've figured it out. We've cracked the code. The all 4-on-5 team is the Grizzlies plus Korver and Anthony Davis. I love it.
I could almost believe, like, seriously, that would be...
Because you got Tony Allen and Mike Conley just heading everything up at the top. Of the top of the box zone. Anthony Davis and Marc Gasol can close out on wing shoot. Anthony Davis can close out on, like, the corner three.
Essentially, you have Davis playing free safety almost, and then...
Yeah, he's like he's playing robber coverage, if we're going to bring football terms into this. Just robber coverage, he's just running around. And Marc Gasol just stays near the block and just makes sure nothing gets at the rim.
I like it.
We can do this. Let's talk about the Knicks.
We have to. the 5-23, are they losing? Have they lost yet?
They have not lost yet. They're in the process of losing to Toronto.
Yeah, they're down 12 in the third.
They're down 12 in the
There's
third.
There's still potential for them to not lose, but I expect them to.
Not much. Not much potential for them to not lose.
It exists. There's bad. A chance. I'm saying there's a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance. All right. So, I mean...
They're really bad.
How do you fix the Knicks in 2 years? I don't see it. So let's say they get their dream guy, who seems to be all Knicks fans want, Towns. Mm-hmm. Let's say they get that number 2 pick. They get Karl Anthony Towns, who's just a monster. So you put him, you have Melo, and you have Shump. Is there anyone else on that team you keep?
Maybe Jose. I'm not sure if that's...
Yeah, he's still got some time on the contract. So maybe Jose... But, like, seriously, like, there's legitimately maybe 3 players on this team that should stay on this team.
Stoudemire comes off the books this year or next year?
Think this year. Okay. His contract stat right now.
That's not going well?
He's actually playing pretty well this year. I think he might be one of their best players this year, which is
really?
Saying a lot. Yeah.
Which, I mean... Yeah, that's not
saying a lot. I mean, that's saying a lot. It's got to be the Manischewitz baths. It's got to be bathing in the red wine that's doing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. What's Stad doing this year? I haven't looked. Okay, he's averaging 13-7. Not bad. All right. Let me see you. I mean, the only thing I think of is you, like, keep... Maybe you keep Stad on a lower contract? Like, re-sign him to a lower contract, have him be Mike Scott?
I don't think you do. It's just not worth it. No, but he's old and decrepit. Mike's athletic still.
They both play defense all about the same, though.
They do play defense about the same.
I'm just firing here. I don't know about what. There's nobody on that roster that's really appealing. Besides, I guess, Melo, who's on a $30 million contract.
Yeah. I just don't know where they go. People are always saying, you know, oh, I trust Phil Jackson. And, you know, it's funny, people are always, like, you know, saying, like, okay, we trust Phil Jackson, that sort of thing. And it makes some sense, but he's never been in, like, a front office position.
No.
It's not like he has... He's been, like, building teams for the last 4 years, 5 years, and kind of learned the ins and outs of that. He's pretty old school, and the rules have changed. Like,
Roger running the triangle?
You wonder. I don't know. I'm not sold that Phil Jackson's the answer. I think they're throwing a lot of money at him to be... I haven't seen him do anything that makes me go, yeah, this is the guy.
I mean, that Tyson trade really didn't move any sort of needles.
It seems like he just kind of panicked to get Tyson and Felton out, which, I mean, you got a clean house in some regards, but, you know, if you're going to clean house, you kind of want to get draft picks if you're in their situation.
Mm-hmm.
Not Jose Calderon. Like, Shane Larkin could be a piece moving forward. I guess that's another guy. Like, he could be a backup guy moving forward. I'm not completely sold on him. I like him fine at Miami, but he's pretty small. I hope Dubin doesn't hear this.
No, we're both fired if Dubin hears this.
I don't know. I just don't know where the Knicks go. I mean, I'm sure they... But the thing is when have they ever gotten a free agent in the last, like, decade? Like, Melo forced his way there because he's from New York. Like, this is the thing people don't realize. It's not like Melo went there because he wanted, like, New York was some destination for other guys. New York's a destination for New York guys. Nobody cares about New York. Nobody cares about the Knicks brand outside of people who are from New York. I'm sorry, Knicks fans.
I mean, it's pretty much, that's pretty true. Like, there's no...
No, there's no cachet anymore. When was the last time they were good? 1999? Mid-2000s? Like, they had that 1 year, a couple years ago, where they got hot?
Yeah.
Like, 99, they went to the finals as an 8 seed in a lockout year. That was weird. Like, nobody chooses New York. They throw money at the wrong people, and maybe that changes, but nobody's choosing New York. Nobody really ever has. Like, the Lakers can believe that because the Lakers get guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Lakers fans, for all their issues, they're... thinking that they can actually sign people and convince people to come there is warranted because in the past they've done it.
Even the Celtics have been able to, you know, they have a better pedigree too. They have 16 titles or 17 titles, I think.
The Knicks have one title. Yeah. What's their pedigree? Their pedigree is mediocre out after like 1975. Like, nobody that's growing up now knows of the old Knicks. Like, it's like lore in New York, so it's passed down generation to generation. Like, mm-hmm. those guys know of Clyde Frazier and this sort of thing. People know, like, kids know Clyde Frazier now because of his suits.
Or because of his Just for Men commercials.
Or that he's kicking grays away with Just for Men. The beard is weird. The stash is trash. Like, that's what they know Clyde for. It's sad, but it's true. No, nobody's like, you know what? Like, in Madison Square Garden? Who cares? Like, honestly, I don't, like, it still has some cash. Like, you know, you hear guys like, but they like to go and score there on the road. Like, mm-hmm. Kyrie loves to play there, but he loves to play there because the Knicks are terrible and he gets to put up 45. You know, LeBron loves to go to New York and play for 2 nights a year. But nobody, like, the media's insane there. It's not, you know, that's not fun. Like, Like, when the Knicks come to town, it's nuts. And this is a bad team, and they get just, it's just insane media all the time.
The
like,
Knicks,
that can't be a whole lot of fun for guys.
The Knicks traveled 9 riders to Atlanta. Like, big paper
riders. No one travels 9 riders to Atlanta. It's Atlanta. Like, Chicago travels a good number. But, like, Chicago and New York just travel just insane amounts of media. And, I mean, Cleveland does when LeBron's there. But, I mean, if you're a really good player, if you're Mark Gasol, why are you going to the Knicks? Like, that seems to be what everybody thinks. Like, oh, we can get Mark Gasol. No, you can't. Mark Gasol's from Spain. He doesn't care about New York. Like, that means nothing to him. I guarantee it. Like, Knicks fans need to accept that. I think that's the biggest problem. I have lots of Knicks fans friends. I love them all. They're some of my favorite people. But at the same time, and I think a lot of them know this, but at least the bloggers know this. But, like, Knicks fans in general seem to think there's some cachet that comes with being the Knicks. When you think the Knicks, you think pretty much mediocrity at this point.
Yeah, they haven't been good in a long time.
I'm saying this as a Hawks fan. Nobody comes to Atlanta. I know this. I'm used to this. I don't expect that. People were talking about Dwight and CP3 coming here a couple years ago, and I was like, nope. That'll never happen.
That was
and
only
from
like,
Atlanta. That was literally our only hope.
They were from here.
Literally the only hope was like here. That Dwight would do a LeBron and go back, but Dwight's not LeBron. Dwight cares zero about being from Atlanta. He doesn't actually want to be here. I mean, who's going to New York? Like, you better hope you have another star coming in that's born in New York and there's not a whole lot of them.
Lance
like,
Stevenson, baby.
Bring him back! Brooklyn. But yeah.
Does that count or does he have to go to the Nets?
No, I think the Nets really aren't from New York.
No.
Like, no one, like, the Nets are still New Jersey to everyone. Like, they can do the stupid chants as much as they want, but you're still New Jersey Nets. I'm sorry, you're not New York. Which is even worse. Like,
the Nets have actually been to finals recently.
Recently. Quote unquote, the early 2000s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just don't. I don't see anybody. I mean, they'll have money, and it's they're more likely to get somebody than Atlanta. I'm not saying that. Like, if money's equal, you're probably gonna more likely see the Knicks get somebody. But I don't think anybody chooses New York over LA. I don't know why you would. Like, LA's got great weather. New York does not.
Or Miami at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Miami's got money. I mean, and now they've got a recent history. They have Pat Riley, who the Knicks fans love. And so, I don't know. I just think Knicks fans are somewhat delusional in thinking that it's going to happen just because Phil's there and they got money.
Now, let's hear
that. That doesn't guarantee anything, because guess what? We've seen a lot of teams think they've got money and just end up having to give someone that doesn't deserve it cash.
Brooklyn.
Exactly. Brooklyn, yeah. Brooklyn's been through this. Like, Knicks fans should look to Brooklyn and be like, okay, let's not do that. Like, they had money, they traded for some guys. And that thing is, like, at this point, young stars are pretty much controlled by the team that drafts them until they're 28 years old.
Mm-hmm.
26 to 28, depending on when they come to the league. It's like 8 years. Because you get that 4-year rookie deal, no one signs the fucking qualifying offer.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're a restricted free agent.
And then you can sign them for four or five-year deal.
Right, and then you give them a 5-year deal and restricted free agency, and you've had them for 9 years. So the only way to get young talent is in a trade, and the Knicks don't have pieces.
Or by drafting, and the Knicks have.
Or by drafting, and the Knicks haven't had draft picks, and when they have, they've not done particularly well.
How many first round draft picks have they had in like the past 5 years? Is it just Shump?
Shump?
Yeah. Is it just Shump? And then that's it.
That's the only one I can think of that's played in the last, like, 3 or 4 years. Because they traded 2 to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, I think, last year's and 2 years before. Or whatever. And then, yeah, no, it's just, It's bad. The Knicks are in rough shape, and I don't know, like, I still have no, like, and there's no way to judge Derek Fisher as a coach off of this team. Like, this team's garbage. So you better hope that Derek Fisher actually can coach, but there's nothing that tells me he can or can't. I can't tell. Like, he makes some bad decisions with lineups, but every coach does that. It's, I mean, to be fair, he's, like, picking from, like, a borderline rotten fruit or a rotten fruit, and sometimes he puts the rotten fruit out. Like, I think one's, like, edible but might make you feel funny, and the other's guaranteed to have you in the bathroom for 4 hours.
I don't know what you're talking about, Robbie. Melo is a great player, and according to Twitter, one great player can take you to the playoffs. That's all you need.
Singular. Singular. Yeah, and, like, come on. That doesn't work. It might work in the East.
The East is,
they could be
East
like an
8
seed in the East in like 2 years. I could see that. Like, they could do that.
Well, hold on. Let's look at this for a second. They're going to lose today. So they're going to go to 5-25. They're down 16 to the Raptors at the end of the third quarter. They're going to lose today. So they'll be 5-25.
No, I'm not saying this year.
No, here's what I'm saying, though. And even then, they're only like 8 games out of 8th.
Which is incredible.
So they're not going to make it this year, but it's not exactly a high bar to get through to make the Eastern Conference playoffs.
That's true. Yeah. So, I mean, they can get in the playoffs, but if Knicks fans want to contend for a championship, it's got to get stripped down. And having Melo is not helping anything. He's going to be old by the time they're able to do anything.
He's 31, Melo? 30?
He's at least a year older than LeBron.
LeBron turns 30 in
like
a week.
Right around 31.
Yeah, LeBron turns 30 in a week. So Melo is 30, 31. Not really big difference.
Let's see. Right. So I'm thinking that they're maybe ready to contend. Like, they're maybe, you know, you're going to go through 2 more years of this crap. Yeah, he's 30. He turns 31 next May.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's going to be old, and, you know, it's not like he's already – I mean, he's got a game that transfers to old age, I think, pretty well. Not defensively, but
right. Offensively,
his game is kind of an old man game.
He bullies guys. Like, he gets jumpers.
He's good in the post. Like, it'll work. But, I mean, he's not going to be the guy that he is now.
Yeah, he's not going to be a number one – he's probably not going to be a number one guy in a couple of years if you want to build a contender.
Right. So I don't know. This is not what Knicks fans needed right now. So to any Knicks fans that listen to us just shit on your team for 10 minutes, I'm sorry. I'm not, but I'm sorry. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think everything comes down to a little bit of luck. Like, you got to hit the right draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
So, honestly, like, a really good draft pick this year could, you know, definitely make them a playoff team in the East. Like, they hit, like, they could be a playoff-type team.
They end up with, like, Towns or Okafor, and they're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even those guys, I mean, we think we know, but what if Towns sucks in the NBA? Like, what? Like,
or what,
I mean,
what if they have, I mean, we've seen it this year with guys with injuries. What if they get a pick and that guy gets injured?
Right. What? 4 of the top 11 guys are out for the year?
Something like that.
In this draft? God. I don't know.
Well, that includes Saric being over in Europe, doesn't it?
No, because, I mean, McDermott's down for a while, and Aaron Gordon might be out for the year with that foot. Like, it's really bad.
Yeah.
And then you got Vonleh's hurt. It's, you know, it's weird. Like, I think people are kind of, like, trashing this rookie class, but it's not their fault. They're all broken.
Whoever's last rookie standing wins rookie of the year. I mean, I'm not even joking. That's, like, literally whoever's playing at the end of the year is probably has the best shot.
Did you play 70 games this year? Okay. Like, you're probably in the top 4 in rookie of the year voting. Which is sad.
It literally could be, like, Wiggins and, like, Elfrid Payton.
Yeah, that's it. That's what you got. It's going to actually just be the Wolves roster. Even Peck. They're just going to give him, like, a third place.
How's Exum doing?
Not great. Not great. Utah's struggling.
But is he functioning? Is he functioning? He might have a shot.
He's alive and well, so I guess, yeah, he's probably in your top three right now.
Man.
He is living.
I guess Mirotić in Chicago, actually, is...
He's playing, but he doesn't get a ton... Yeah, I mean, yeah, Exum's not doing great. 4.8 points and 2 assists per game.
Oof.
I mean, he gets 18 minutes. Yeah, he's not...
He's not moving the needle much this year.
There's not a lot going on there. He's shooting, like, 35% from 3, so he's, like, shooting it better than I think people expected, but he's just... I mean, he's also stuck behind Trey Burke.
Mirotić could actually win this just by... you know, proxy of being on a winning team where he doesn't have to play much.
True.
I mean, he's averaging 8-5.
8-5 for this rookie class is damn good. Yeah, and I mean, he gets the exposure.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's watching Minnesota games. Nobody. And nobody should.
They're not good.
Wolves friends.
I mean, they know they're not good. Rubio's out.
No, yeah. Like, once Rubio's back, they're kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, when they get Rubio back, they can run around, they can be cool, but...
They won't win a lot, but they'll be a lot more fun.
Right. All right, so I'll end with a quick story, and this is my only real interaction with Kevin Garnett in my life. Bo was actually standing there for this entire thing. Larry Drew used to do his pregame press conference in his office, which is super weird. So we didn't have a room to sit in. We had to wait for him to open up his office. So we all stood down in the hallway, which was the same hallway that the players for the opposing team had to come down. So we were standing outside, and I mean, like, we were in the hallway. There were a good number of us because the Nets were in town. And so I guess their bus had pulled in. And so, like, there were some players that walked by. And I was just kind of, like, standing there, and, like, a couple players went by, so there's clearly, like, room to walk by. And all of a sudden, I feel somebody just, like, shove me from behind. And I, like, ran into the wall and just kind of, like, turned around. And it's KG. He's got his headphones on. I assume he was listening to, like, the I'm the Man song or whatever, like his stupid commercial. And he was just like, excuse me, as he, like, shoves me into the wall. Which
he did say, excuse me, Robbie. I have to give him that.
After he did it, it wasn't like an excuse me, and then like it was like shove.
It wasn't like excuse me and a little like love tap to get you to move out of the way. It was like
put a stiff arm on me.
It's like I'm moving you out of the way. By the way, excuse me.
Straight Heisman on me, like. So I don't like KG. Is the moral of the story.
I don't think anybody really likes KG.
Yeah. So, like, if you ever had the thought, like, is KG like he is on the court off of it? The answer is yes.
I should point out, too, Robbie's not exactly an easy person to move out of the way, and that was just...
No, not a small human being. Still, straight shoved into a wall by Kevin Garnett. Good times.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll leave you with that. Thanks for listening to ATL Shelly Hoops. Sorry, Knicks fans. Kind of. And we'll be back next week, and I won't trash the Knicks. I'll find somebody else to make fun of. Bo, any final thoughts?
I'm just really hoping that our 4-on-5 idea goes through somehow and we end up with those guys on one team playing 4-on-5.
I think it worked. Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Championship caliber. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. It's been a lot of fun, and we'll try to be better next time.